March 25th, 2014. You can't make it go vertically. At Govardhan. It doesn't have to be, but it's easy. It'll work best like that. In Vrindavan, and we're doing part three of Krishna's reciprocation. So I thought we would start just here with a little review of the nine kinds of persons that Krishna explained. So the gopis list just three main kinds, and then Krishna took two of those three and divided them further. Right? So he just took the first one, the business exchange, the merchant. And what did he say about those people? They have no what? No love, no what else? No dharma, no
real friendship.
No friendship. What else? So no dharma, no love, no friendship. Right? No happiness, remember? Basically just miserable. And he said they were worse even than people who have no tinge of loving exchanges. And then he talked about those who give even when they don't get reciprocation. He gave two categories. The pure devotees, like, what was his example? His example, Prahlad. And the other main example, of course, is the gopis themselves. And then another category is family. So you're giving selflessly, regardless of reciprocation, because you think these are my people, these are my swajana. Then those who are indifferent, the self-realized person, the Brahman-realized person, who just doesn't care about relationships in the world. The materialist, who has all their desires satisfied. Then the foolish person, who's so absorbed in themselves that they don't even notice what anyone else does for them. They're not even aware that anybody does anything for them. Then three inimical people, so people who hate those who care for them, who love them. One who hates when there's a reason to hate, when the person's done good for them but also has hurt them in some way. Those who hate with no reason, and those who not only hate for, with no reason, but who harm with no reason. And then the gopis were wondering, all right, Krishna, we know you're not just a merchant, and we know you're not just giving without... giving to people who give nothing to you, so you must be one of the ungrateful people. All right, so now we're going to go to our third part, and of course also to look back at the whole context of what's going on here. So these are the gopis who, the sadhana-siddha gopis, these were people who were with Lord Ramachandra, or they were the personified Vedas. And these are persons who were aspiring for a relationship with Krishna for millions or billions of years. And who Krishna then, they finally take birth as gopis, and Krishna finally calls them. And then they come to Krishna, he sends them home. They refuse to go. And then they're playing with Krishna. And then Krishna suddenly leaves, and then he returns. So we may wonder again, just like the gopis were wondering, why Krishna doesn't always reciprocate, why he sometimes seems not to reciprocate at all, why he seems to reciprocate just a little bit, that we seem to be very surrendered and very sacrificing and very devoted, and yet sometimes it seems like he's just not there. Or sometimes this reciprocation may seem very harsh to us. Right, I know of one devotee, she went to Nisingadev and said, I just want to surrender everything. And right after that, her husband fell in love with another woman. And so we may think, you know, well, I don't like the way Krishna, either he just doesn't reciprocate with me at all, or he reciprocates with me only slightly, or he reciprocates with me in ways that seem rather harsh. So, you know, what is it with this Krishna? So here we're going to meditate on the fact that when we really get to know and understand how much love Krishna has for us. We were just talking about our confusion, but if we can also think about some time when we felt really loved, when we felt that Krishna really, really loved us. I mean, even sometimes it's a little thing, like I have my counter beads attached to my bead bag with a safety pin, and the other day it broke. I mean, I'd used it, I don't know, for 5 years probably, and it broke, so I had two spares. So I used one of the spares, and then I thought, all right, I got to make sure I get another one. So I have two spares. And then this morning I sat down for class, and there was a safety pin just lying. There was actually a bunch of them, just like lying on the ground. Oh, look at that. I thought Krishna just takes care of even the little things that I need. So sometimes we experience that, huh? Krishna's love for us. Or even we just meditate on our lives in general, how Krishna is providing us with the sunshine and the moonshine and the digestive fire and our abilities, and we meditate on how much Krishna loves us, and then we feel very happy, don't we? Don't we feel happy? So, does anyone here have exactly as many clothes as they need? Anybody here? No. Who here has more clothes than they actually need to live? Who here has more varieties of food than they need to have just to be healthy? Who has more varieties of food than they need to be healthy? Okay. So we have so much evidence of Krishna's love, isn't it? I like to give the example of the flowers. Do we need flowers? Does anybody like need flowers? No, we don't need flowers. You can say, well, the plants need flowers to pollinate, but they can have just plain ones. There are lots of plants that don't have beautiful, fragrant flowers, yes? So we're all criminals. Have you ever heard of any government that puts flowers in the prisons? Can you imagine? So this is a prison, and Krishna puts flowers here. So how much Krishna loves us? How much the devotees love us, that the great devotees are sacrificing their lives for the sake of preaching. And when we get even a little glimpse of that love that Krishna has for us, then we feel completely satisfied. We feel satisfied in ways that we never feel satisfied with our relationships that are not connected with Krishna. Whenever we're in a merchant type of relationship, or if we're in a foolish, ungrateful relationship, we never feel the kind of satisfaction that we feel from just one moment of knowing, wow, Krishna really loves me. So today we're going to be meditating. Right? First, our first part was we were on the gopis' questions, and then Krishna's explanation of the nine kinds of relationships. And now Krishna's going to talk about himself. Now again, remember, the gopis didn't ask him that question. They didn't say, who are you? They said, what person is the best? Who's the most honest? And really, Krishna's already answered that. He already said that the great devotees, like Prahlad Maharaj, were the best. He's already answered that question. But Krishna knew what their real question was, so now Krishna's going to go and tell us about himself. And what inspired me to do this presentation was reading something in the Ananda Vrindavan Champu, that it really sort of amazed me about the nature of Krishna's love for his devotees and Krishna's reciprocation. So, here we go. So Krishna says, well, I can't be the merchant. There's no way I can be the merchant, because people worship me and I don't just reciprocate with them in kind. Here you see somebody worshiping Krishna, and Krishna's looking away. Huh? Actually, this is in the Mayapur Academy, in the deity dressing training room. I don't know where that picture's taken. So Krishna says, I'm not the merchant. People do something for me, and I do not necessarily immediately give back what they give me. And he says, nor am I in the second category. Does anybody know what this picture is? Yes, Arjuna and Duryodhan. So Arjuna and Duryodhan, and there's Arjuna, and there's Duryodhan, and there's Krishna getting up from bed in Dwarka. So Duryodhan was inimical to Krishna, and Krishna didn't show him compassion. Right? He didn't show him compassion. He told Bhima, you know, go hit him on the thigh. Of course, Balaram showed him compassion, but that's another story. But Krishna can say, yes, to those who are inimical to me, I ignore them. Or I'm just neutral to them. Even as the Paramatma, you could say Krishna is neutral. Yes? Krishna is neutral to those who are inimical to him. It's not that Krishna is showering his love on those who are inimical to him. So you can say he's not in the second category. Yet, you can say that Krishna is like that. You can say he's like that. Right. So Krishna says, in another sense, I am the ideal example of the second person. Because I do actually take care of people even who don't take care of me. Therefore, you could say that. And in fact, Krishna explains that I really am responding. I really am responding both to the people who worship me and to the people who don't worship me. And although I'm not in the mood, Krishna's saying, of a merchant, I have made a promise, yea tamam prapadyante tam stitayava prajamyaham, that I will reciprocate with people according to their desire. So just like Lord Kapila Dev says, that the Lord takes a form according to the way the devotee worships him. And Sanatana Goswami explains in Brihad Bhagavatamrita that the residents of Vaikuntha have many, many different colors. And their colors correspond to the color of the form of the Lord that they worshipped. So depending on who you worship, Krishna then reciprocates with you accordingly. So Krishna says, so to some extent, I am both of those categories. I am reciprocating to people with people according to how they worship me, and I am taking care of everyone, even if they're inimical to me. Then he says, I'm also not any of those four indifferent people. Remember, there were four main types and then three types of the fourth type. So he says, this is really interesting. I'm not Atmarama. So we talk about how Krishna is the greatest Atmarama. Atmarama means someone who's satisfied in themselves. They don't need any satisfaction out of themselves. Now, who's more Atmarama than Krishna? Om Purnama Da Purnamidam. Krishna is complete. Krishna is everything. When Krishna was arguing with Rukmini, and he said, you know, I'm penniless, I don't own anything. So later when she argued with him, she said, it's true you don't own anything, because you are everything. So, you know, like when Bali was trying to figure out where to give for his third step, he thought, well, Vamandev's taken everything, but in one sense, the person who owns is separate from everything that they own. So even though he's taken everything, I'm still separate from all the everythings, and therefore I can give myself. Of course, Vamadeva didn't agree, and therefore he arrested him and said, you've cheated me, you only gave me two steps. Rukmini was saying that, because you are everything, you can't own anything. So if you are everything, then naturally you're fully satisfied in and of yourself. But here Krishna says, I'm not really an Atmarama either, because I get attracted by my devotees. Just like we find the Atmaramas Tumuneo, the great Atmaramis, like the four Kumaras, Sukadeva Goswami, they get attracted by Krishna, even though they're satisfied in themselves. So Krishna's saying, I get attracted by my devotees. Therefore, I'm not indifferent. Yes? Yes, why piteous? So this, here you can see in this picture, here the gopis are in separation. They don't actually see Krishna. And Krishna's hiding and listening to their conversations. Can you see that clearly?
Yes.
Actually, it looks a little fuzzy. Anyway, so Krishna's listening to their conversations, and it's explained that when Krishna left the gopis, that he was still there, although they couldn't perceive him, and he was very much attracted to them talking about him. Just like we may be attracted to listen to someone talking about us in our absence. Right? And then Krishna's saying, how can I be called indifferent at all? Not only am I attracted by the conversations of my devotees, but I'm also giving to everyone. So how can I be indifferent? Even if people are inimical to me, I care about them. Nitya nitya nam chaitanya chaitanam eko bahunam yo vidadati kama. The one living entity is supplying all the desires of all other living entities. So Krishna's caring for everyone. If you're indifferent, you don't care. Right? We talked about the indifferent person neither loves anybody nor hates anybody, whether they love him or not. Then he's saying, I'm not really Aptikama. He's saying, I am Aptikama. I can satisfy my own desires. Aptikama, remember, that's the category of the person who has so much that they don't need anyone else's help to feel satisfied. Therefore, they're indifferent. So Krishna says, I am Aptikama. I can satisfy myself. But yet, I hanker for the service of my devotees. Now, of course, it's interesting because Krishna's devotees ultimately are part of Krishna. So you could say when Krishna's devotees serve Krishna, it's really Krishna serving himself. Like it's described in the Rasa Lila chapter, that it was like a child playing with himself in a mirror. So in one sense, none of us are separate from Krishna. And therefore, when we serve Krishna and Krishna enjoys that, he's not enjoying something outside of himself. But from another perspective, he is. And Krishna's saying that he comes to hanker for this service. He wants this service. He wants something that's from his devotees. So he says he's not Aptikami. He's not free from any desires. No, he's not indifferent being free from desires. And the acharyas comment that Krishna feels that he wants to protect, he wants to maintain his devotees. Right in the commentary to Yoga Kshema Vahamyaham, that I will preserve what they have and carry what they lack. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur discusses, you know, why should the devotees burden you, Krishna, with what they need? And Krishna replying, but I enjoy taking care of them. So, just like, how old is your little boy? 1.5 years old? How old is he? 1.5? 1.5. So, when my oldest son was 1.5, I was sitting in darshan with Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, just like this mother is loving this child without expectation of return, in the same way you should love Krishna. Right? So, generally, probably not 100% of the time, but generally, you enjoy taking care of your child, yes? Yes? You enjoy fulfilling his needs and fulfilling his desires. All of us have someone in our life at some time that we've loved. Has everybody loved somebody in your life sometime? I hope everybody's loved somebody. Sometime, maybe it was your mommy or somebody. And then you enjoy pleasing them. You get pleasure out of pleasing them. You want to do that. So Krishna also feels this way. Krishna feels, I want to take care of the living entities. I want to take care of my devotees. Therefore, he's saying, I'm not indifferent. And then, of course, we come to the Guru Druhi. So the Guru Druhi, those are people who are ungrateful. So he says, I'm not an akritigyan. Akritigyan is ignorant. So how is Krishna not ungrateful? One of Krishna's qualities is gratitude. Rupa Goswami explains gratitude. And anyone know what example that Rupa Goswami gives of Krishna being grateful? Yes?
Draupadi.
Yes.
Krishna, just one time.
Just, yeah. Hey Krishna, hey Govinda, there, and immediately he saves her. And I remember in 1975, 1995, Srila Prabhupada was in Philadelphia for the Rath Yatra. He was giving a lecture. He was lecturing from the sixth canto, which hadn't been published yet. So he was talking about Ajamila. And he said in the class, so Ajamila was at the point of death. And at that, when we didn't have the published books, the manuscripts, Prabhupada would often ask another devotee to read the verse in the translation and the purport. So the devotee read the verse, and he wrote, so Ajamila was crying out, Narayana, Narayana, Narayana. And Prabhupada says, why three times? He said, I did not say three times. Why have you written three times? He said, just one time. Narayana, that is sufficient. So that's grateful. That's grateful. If somebody turned their back on me and denied me and then just said my name one time, I wouldn't say, okay, that's it, everything finished. I accept you. But Krishna is so grateful. I mean, he's so grateful that even if people say his name inadvertently, you know, Autorama, Sinarama, Prabhupada called George Harrison, George Harrison. Right? So even if people say Krishna's name without meaning it, I remember one time I was in a crowd of people who were talking. You know that sound when many, many people are talking? A kind of a blur of sound? I don't know how to imitate it. And I thought I heard someone say my name, and immediately I heard that. Isn't that interesting? I couldn't make out any specific words in the crowd of talking, but when it was my name, I could hear it. So Krishna will hear even somebody who seems to be saying his name, right? Sometimes we think somebody says, oh, did you call me? No, 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 I was saying something else. But we become immediately attentive. So Krishna is so grateful. He's grateful for one tulsi leaf. He's grateful for one cup of water. He's grateful for one flower. And he remembers. He remembers. He remembers over many, 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 many lifetimes. I mean, Prabhupada would say, if you just appreciate, the book is very nice. You just touch the book. Immediately you get benefit. And you'll get, Prabhupada said, a human birth in a good body, good family. You just imagine, so somebody may be, you know, eating cow meat and drinking alcohol and doing all kinds of things. But if one time in their life they say, oh, very nice book. And they get a human birth in a good family. So, have we ever met anybody that's that grateful? Do you know anybody who's that grateful? Any other, you know, ordinary person who has that level of gratitude? Most human beings, they tend to focus on the bad in others. Have you noticed that in this world? And most people, they focus on the bad in others and they ignore the good. And even if they're aware of the good, they think, well, as long as you have so much bad, how can I focus on the good? But Krishna is just the opposite. So here Krishna has explained with all the nine types of people that he's not any of them, right? And yet he's the best of all of them. Krishna is the best merchant because he perfectly reciprocates. But he's not a merchant at all because he's not having relationships for his own benefit. Then Krishna doesn't care about those who are indifferent. At the same time, he takes care of everyone. Everyone, not just some. Therefore, he's the best of those who give even to those who hate them. And Krishna is not the indifferent person because Krishna really cares about the love of his devotees and really wants to reciprocate with the love of his devotees. At the same time, he's fully self-satisfied. And he's fully detached in and of himself. So therefore, Krishna can't be put into any mundane category. You can't say, okay, Krishna's like this, or compare him to some person in this world. Because Krishna's even the best of the negative. Krishna's even the best of the indifferent. Just like one of Krishna's personality types is Dhirodhata. Do you all know about Krishna's personalities? So Krishna is Dhirodhata, Dhirodhata, Dhirolalita, and Dhiroprasanta. Dhiroprasanta is the gentleman. That's epitomized when Krishna washes everyone's feet at the Rajasuya Yajna. Maharaj Yudhisthira is an example of the Dhira Prasanta personality. The just mellow, mild, caring, empathic, right? Every woman wants a man who's a gentleman and really cares about her and really loves her and serves her. That's the Dhira Prasanta, peaceful, gentleman. Then Krishna is also the Dhiradatta. Dhiradatta is the hero. Ramchandra is a Dhiradatta. Lifting Govardhan Hill is Dhiradatta. Very chivalrous, very noble, very handsome. The protector. Right? Everyone wants a man like that too. Someone who'll protect you, who does very heroic, noble, chivalrous deeds. Right? And then Krishna is the Dhiralalita. So Dhiralalita is not found in any other incarnation of Krishna. Dhiralalita is the party boy. So Dhiralalita, he's controlled by his girlfriends. He's always joking, always wants to have a good time. Right? So women also are attracted to this Dhiralalita, the party boy, the fun boy, someone who's fun. But then Krishna is also Dhiradatta. So Dhiradatta is like Bhima. Hey, what are you doing? You rascal, I will cut off your head. That's the Dhiradatta, the bad boy. Right? He's the bad boy. You think about the hero who's riding on a motorcycle, you know, and so that's Dhiradatta, like when Lord Varaha said to Hiranyaka, yes, we are creatures of the jungle. I just got says, yes, we are creatures of, but thank you. Yes, we are creatures of the jungle, and we are searching after hunting dogs like you, those who are free from the influence of death. Do not speak the kind of words in which you are indulging, for you are under the laws of death. So he's insulting him, right? Or when Krishna talks to the messengers of Prindraka, and he says, yes, I will give up my Sudarshan disc by cutting off his head. He wants me to take shelter of him, but instead, the only persons who will take shelter of him he'll become the shelter for the dogs and the jackals on the battlefield who eat his body, and you go give him that message. The tough guy, the bad boy. So, also, that's attractive, right? The bad boy. So Krishna is the gentleman, the hero, the party boy, and the bad boy. And Rupa Goswami explains that the bad boy qualities, Dhiradatta, are generally seen as negative. But in Krishna, they're beautiful. So even though we may say that Krishna has this aptakama, atmarama indifference, in Krishna it is also beautiful. And of course, in Krishna, he's also attracted to his devotees. So Krishna is the ideal of all of the three types, and yet Krishna is none of them. You really can't put him in any of them. All right, well, we still don't really have an answer to our question, do we? We found out who are the nine types of people, and we find out that Krishna is all of them and none of them. That Krishna is the perfection of all of them, but Krishna isn't any of them. So who is he, and what is he doing? Those devotees who have not yet attained prema, those devotees who have not yet attained love. And he says, for those devotees, I appear not to reciprocate, so they will develop humility. If immediately upon our devotion Krishna appeared, we might become a little proud, huh? We might say, oh, I can just have Krishna whenever I want. Wow, all I have to do, I just chant Hare Krishna. Now, for those who are already pure, like when Narada Muni, once he saw Krishna, he said to Vyasadeva, he said, all I have to do is meditate on the Lord. He didn't see Krishna face to face again after that time. But he said, all I have to do is meditate on the Lord. And then he comes as if called. He appears on the lotus of my heart as if called. Narada Muni, when speaking to Vyasadeva. So for those who already have prema, because they already have humility, they can have this mood. that whenever I call for Krishna, there he is. But for those who don't have love, if they think whenever I call for Krishna, there he is, they become very proud. And they think, oh, I'm a very great devotee. I have Krishna in the palm of my hand. Whenever I call for Krishna, he just comes. So it's very interesting in Brihad Bhagavatamrita that Sanatana Goswami explains that this humility, danya, is absolutely essential for prema. That without humility, there cannot be prema. So how is that? So the acharyas explain that for those who haven't developed prema, they think, everything I have done has been useless because I am an offender and could not get a drop of mercy. I am most unfortunate. So have you ever felt like this?
Yes.
You know, I'm chanting, I'm worshiping the deity, I'm going out on Sankirtan, I'm serving my spiritual master, and I still don't have Krishna. It's all useless. It's hopeless. I can't do anything. So why is that mentality essential? So if we think about humility, humility is the sense of, I don't deserve anything. I don't deserve anything. So materially we think that if someone feels they don't deserve anything, that they have some sort of a psychological problem. They need to take pills or something, you know. But if you think of it very logically, so if you have some money, let's say you have 1,000 rupees, and you go to the shop and you buy something and it's worth 1,000 rupees, how do you feel? Okay. So you have 1,000 rupees, you go to the shop, and you buy something, and you get back, and someone says, oh, you know, I got that over there for only 300 rupees. How do you feel? You feel really upset, right? Annoyed. And you get something for 1,000 rupees, and then someone tells you, wow, that usually costs 10,000 rupees. How did you get it for only 1,000? Then how do you feel? Very happy. So our sense of happiness is an inverse proportion to our feeling of deserving. Our sense of happiness is an inverse proportion to our feeling of deserving. Our sense of happiness is an inverse proportion to our feeling of deserving. Remember we talked about the merchants? And why does the merchants have no happiness? Because they're always calculating. I've given, what am I getting? I'm giving, what am I getting? And if they get equal, so what? Spend 1,000 rupees, get something worth 1,000 rupees. Okay. It's not very exciting. So if the person who's in a relationship with me, if they're giving back to me what I'm giving, does that give me any happiness? No, I paid for it. Right? That's what I paid for. If they give me less than what I think I gave, and most people in merchant relationships generally feel that they're giving more than what they're getting back, then I feel very disturbed. I can't appreciate what I get. Right? As soon as people are in merchant relationships, they have to feel they're getting more than what they're giving in order to feel satisfied, even a little bit. But if you feel you're giving nothing, then you can actually be appreciative. If you think about something wonderful you got that you don't feel you earned at all, you really can appreciate it. Wow, what a nice gift I've gotten. So that's love. Love is that I care only about the happiness of the person I love. I'm not thinking about what I'm getting. I'm thinking about what can I give? How can I give the other person happiness? I'm getting my happiness from their happiness. And whatever the person gives to me, I consider a great and wonderful thing, even if it's very small. Who perfectly thinks like this? Who perfectly thinks like this? The pure devotees and Krishna himself. What gives Krishna the most happiness? to please his devotees. And Krishna gets excited about one cup of water. He gets excited about Sinarama. He gets excited about the Krishna liquor shop. You know, they have a Krishna liquor shop in Delhi. You've seen? But because it says Krishna, he gets excited. You understand? So Krishna is appreciating every little, teeny, tiny thing that anyone gives him. And he's getting happiness just by wanting the happiness of others. That's love. That's love. And that's what Krishna's trying to develop in the aspiring devotee. That mood. That my happiness is seeing Krishna happy. And anything that Krishna does for me, or the devotees do for me, is wonderful. Therefore, the devotee needs a deep sense of I don't deserve anything. And therefore, Krishna hides himself. So the devotee doesn't feel that I've earned Krishna. I've paid for Krishna. Of course, Krishna has to show up. I can control Krishna. Lust. Here, Krishna is saying the bhakti grows free from lust and anger. Lust is, I want something without paying for it. And anger is, why don't I get what I deserve? Why haven't I gotten what I deserve? Is it that Krishna wants to deal with the devotees like that? No. He doesn't. But he knows it's what's good for them. You know, when your child is sick and you have to give them some bitter medicine, do you want to give them bitter medicine? Do you take pleasure in giving them bitter medicine or an injection? No. You feel pain. But you know it's what's good for them. Right? When one of your children hits another child over the head with their toys, and you have to take the toy away, and your child is screaming, give me my toy back! You suffer. But you know it's what's good for them. So Krishna's here, he's enduring 1,000 times more pain. So when we're there, Krishna, Krishna, where are you? Why aren't you reciprocating with me? Where are you? Whatever pain we feel, Krishna's feeling 1,000 times more pain. I wish I could just show myself to them. I wish I could just come and reciprocate with them fully right now. But if I do that, they'll not mature. They'll not grow in the way that they should grow. They'll not be free of the difficulties. They won't be able to attain real love. It's like you don't pick a fruit before it's ripe. No matter how anxious you are for the fruit, Krishna is very anxious. Krishna is more anxious, Prabhupada would say, than we are. Prabhupada said every one step we take towards Krishna, Krishna takes 10 steps towards us. Krishna is more anxious than we are. You know, I mean, we may say, yes, yes, I want prema, and then after that we think, oh yeah, and I'd like, let's see, a blue sari with the purple border, and what's for prasadam today? Oh yeah, I really want Krishna, and I wish that person wouldn't treat me like that, and, right? We want so many things. But Krishna intensely wants our prema. In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when Gopal Kumar comes to Vaikuntha, Lord Vishnu says to him, for so many of your lifetimes, I was dancing like a fool, thinking, well, in this lifetime will he say my name? In this lifetime will he serve me? In this lifetime will he come back to me? And life after life, you did not do so. He said, and then I didn't know what to do. I wanted you back. But I didn't want to break the laws of karma. He said, so I arranged for you to take birth at Govardhan. Well, that way you could get some bhakti credits without breaking the universal laws. So Krishna's anxious. You know, when we just say Sinarama, or we take one bite of prasadam, or we say, what a beautiful book, Krishna wants to just run and, yes, 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 you're mine, you're mine, you're mine, come, come. And when it's hard for us, and it's a struggle, we're struggling with our senses, we're struggling with our mind, we wonder where Krishna is. He wants to just come and fix it. But he knows, right? He knows that for our benefit, we have to properly mature, and we can only properly mature when we are rid of our pride. When we're rid of our sense of I deserve, when we're rid of our sense of I'm the doer, when we're rid of our sense that I'm the controller. Without that, we'll not get what we really want. What about for the devotees who already have prema? So for the devotees who already have prema, Krishna sometimes doesn't reciprocate in order to intensify that prema more and more. And you might say, well, that's not very nice, but actually it is. Because we're all looking for loving relationships that increase. Material loving relationships generally, not always, but generally decrease in intensity, generally speaking. Like if you fall in love with a nice boy, when you're first in love, it's very intense. If any of you have ever been in love with a boy, it's very, very intense. You think of him all the time. You think of him when you're brushing your teeth. You think of him when you're riding on the train. You think of him when you're in your chemistry class. It just doesn't matter what you're doing. You're always thinking about him. But that intensity doesn't last. After you're married to him for 10 years, you don't think of him anymore when you're brushing your teeth. Right? And some people don't understand this, and they go from one partner to another trying to keep that intensity. Of course, that brings other problems, because there's no love without sacrifice. But the same with a child. Right? When you first have a baby, when your baby's first born, you're thinking about your baby all the time. You put your baby down to sleep, and you walk in the next room, and you keep, how's my baby, how's my baby? You're waking up in the middle of the night, is my baby breathing, is he breathing? You know, but here I am at the Vaishnavi retreat. I haven't had any communication with the outside world practically, except a few phone calls to Vrindavan. And I'm not really worried. Are my children breathing? You know? I'm not calling, are you breathing? Are you breathing? I think, oh, some emergency, somebody will call me. I'm not thinking about them all the time. And when they were little babies, they thought about me all the time. Where's my mommy? Where's my mommy? They're not thinking about me all the time. Oh yeah, is it your birthday today? Okay. It decreases. It doesn't stay. I have one devotee friend who bought a dog, and she told me, yeah, in the beginning they're cute, and after a while it's just work. But we're looking for relationships where the love keeps increasing and increasing and increasing. And it keeps getting better and better and more and more and more and more and more intense. So that relationship we have with Krishna. And part of the way Krishna does this is by this union separation. So Krishna sometimes apparently withdraws, even for those who have prema, because everybody is enjoying that increase of love. He said, though such devotees then are engaged in remembering me. And Krishna gives an interesting example here. He says, just like if you're very poor, then you get a lot of wealth, and then you lose it. You're absorbed in it all the time. So we have many examples of this in the Shastra, where a devotee actually attains prema, Krishna appears, and then he disappears. And so the devotee's love and affection for Krishna increase and increase and increase and increase and increase and increase and increase. Well then, categories. they're not the aspiring devotees who haven't yet attained prema. And nor are they just the devotees who've attained prema. There's no question that the gopis' love for Krishna could increase. I mean, it can increase because it's not static, but it's not like the devotee who's attained prema where it can still go to higher and higher levels. So Krishna's love is very mysterious. It's very wonderful. Krishna has a special love with the gopis, who are the limit with of devotees, and really can't be dealt with in either of those ways. Oh, Krishna now feels very sorry. He says, I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have left you. There's no devotees like you. Not in the past, not in the present, not in the future. You're not in any of the categories of devotees. He said, your love for me can't be increased, it can't be decreased. It's already the limit. He said, so my purpose in leaving you was really different. I didn't leave you to mature your love, which was already mature. I didn't leave you in order to increase your prema to higher and higher levels. Really, the only reason I left you was to show everybody else that there's nobody like you. That you could aspire for me for billions of years and do sadhana for billions of years and then take birth as gopis, then have me call you and come and have me send you home. And you say no, and I stay with you. And when you are finally thinking, now I have attained everything and I am the most fortunate, I have nothing further to aspire for. Everything I have ever wanted has been completely fulfilled. Here I am walking with Krishna. I could leave you at that point and you would still love me. Who would continue to love in such a case? But the gopis still love Krishna. They don't reject Krishna. In fact, they become so absorbed in Krishna, they practically start thinking that they are Krishna. And Krishna says, I left you just to glorify you, just to praise you, just to have everybody glorify you. He said, really, there's no question of anything being equal between us. Because you've given up everything for me. You gave up your husbands. You gave up your dharma. And for the sadhana siddha gopis, giving up their dharma was not a small thing. You know, the sadhana siddha gopis, some of them are the personified Vedas. They're the personified Vedas. And they were the personified Vedas for a whole day of Lord Brahma. Imagine how deep in such persons is the concept of dharma. It's not like in the modern day when everybody gives up dharma. They don't even know what dharma is to give up. People lie, people cheat, people are unfaithful. It doesn't mean anything to them. But these are people for whom dharma was everything. They were the personified dharma. They gave that up. They gave up everything. Did Krishna give up everything? No. Krishna didn't walk away from Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj and all his friends. So he says, therefore I cannot repay you. My promise that whatever people give, I reciprocate. I can't keep this promise with you. Gopis started thinking about what Krishna was saying. And they said, actually, Krishna has no faults. And he already knew about our love. But when he left us, he did two things. He established that we were superior to him. And that he's now put himself in our debt. And here's what surprised me and started me on the seminar. The gopi said, we ask Krishna questions in order to defeat him, in order to make him admit that he was ungrateful, in order to make him admit that he acted improperly. But actually, everything Krishna did was out of love for us. So we have also been defeated by his love. That Krishna wanted to show that we love him more than he loves us, because we've given up everything for him. He hasn't given up everything for us. We loved him even when he left us. He's trying to show that we're superior, but we can understand that his love is superior, because we wanted to criticize him and he only wanted to glorify us. So we can learn from this to assume that everything that Krishna is doing with us is loving. Prasanta was talking about how we have this Dainakasura in our heart that tells us we don't want to surrender. And why don't we want to surrender? We're scared. We think maybe Krishna doesn't really love me. Maybe if I surrender, he won't take care of me. Maybe if I surrender, he'll hurt me in some way. We're not sure that he's our best friend. So we should assume that Krishna's our best friend. Now, we can't artificially surrender. That's a very bad idea. Please don't do that. Please don't go to Krishna and say, Krishna, I totally surrender to you today, if you don't mean that, because Krishna will simply show you that you don't mean it and it won't be a pleasant experience. But one can say to Krishna, Krishna, please give me the faith. Please give me the courage that I can trust you, that I can really let go, that I can trust that everything you do, even when you seem to go far away, even when you seem to reciprocate in a way that's opposite to what I want or not reciprocate at all, that actually everything you're doing is loving. And if there's anyone who's not loving, it's me. Please help me to be the kind of person that you can trust, that you're really going to open up your heart to, that you're really going to give yourself to, that you know that I won't hurt you, and help me to really trust you. And then, of course, after the gopis were fully satisfied by Krishna's answer, and that Krishna apologized to the gopis and said he was their debtor, then, of course, they started the rasa dance. Rasa dance means that Krishna is reciprocating with each devotee individually. Each devotee is thinking, I am Krishna's favorite. Krishna is giving me all of his attention. But they no longer have any pride. They no longer have any sense of my accomplishment. I deserve. And the love, although it's already at its limit, and cannot increase even by an atom, is increasing and increasing and increasing without limit. So if we want to contribute, depending, of course, on our eternal identity, how exactly we will contribute, but if we want to contribute to this eternal love between Krishna and all of his devotees, then we want to come to the point where we fully trust how Krishna is reciprocating with us, and that we deal with him in a mood of a real friend and a real beloved, to love him when times are good from our perspective, when they're bad from our perspective, and really give him our heart. And that is the perfection. So I hope you enjoyed this presentation. So if anyone has questions or comments or discussion, yes.
It's a very personal It's a personal question to you, but it's just a humble request if you can share with us what exactly was so impressing you.
What really impressed me? Well, what really impressed me was the place where the gopis say we wanted to make Krishna look bad and he wanted to make us look good. That really struck me. I mean, it really struck me because from an external perspective, Krishna really didn't behave very nicely. If somebody worships you for billions and billions of years, you know, and you're fine, and you call them, and then you're right at the point of the height of loving exchanges, and then you just leave. So from an external perspective, that wasn't a very nice thing to do. Was it? Was that a very nice thing to do? Was it? In ordinary dealings, would that be very nice? If you spent years and years and years trying to have a relationship with someone and then they finally say, okay, I'm ready to be your friend, whatever the relationship is. All right, well, I finally, get to be with this person. And they say, all right, well, let's go shopping or something, and you're out there and you're really having a great time and you're like, wow, I'm finally with this person. I've always wanted to be with them. And all of a sudden you look around, they're just gone. It's gone. No explanation. No clue as to where they are. And you're looking and you're looking and you're looking and you're looking for hours and hours and hours. And then after all, they just show back up again. Oh, hi. So from that, it seemed to the gopis that Krishna was really wrong. And they were really right. It seemed to them that Krishna was the one in the wrong there. That he shouldn't have done that. That he had no good reason to do it at all. And then when Krishna presented his reasons, the gopis said, oh, we were the ones who were wrong for accusing you because everything you do is loving. Even in our material relationships, it's so easy to accuse people of having ill motives or doing something wrong when their real motives are actually good. Hasn't anyone ever done that with you? Accused you of having ill motives when you had good motives? You were trying to do the right thing and you were trying to make them happy. And sometimes the very thing that you were doing to make somebody happy, that people got angry at you for that exact thing. Right? And we sometimes do that to other people. We get really angry at somebody for doing something where the other person had their only desire was to make us happy. So that was the gopi's conclusion. It also just struck me how naughty Krishna is, that he manipulated the gopis into having that conclusion and he turned everything around. He turned everything around, He started out, they're accusing him and they end up accusing themselves at the end. So I was appreciating it on many levels. Is that all right?
Maybe Krishna also wanted to see how they react and
Krishna wanted to see how they react. First of all, Krishna already knew how they'd react. He wanted to glorify their response for everyone else. Because again, on the external level, you would just walk away from somebody like that, wouldn't you? You'd say, forget you. I guess you don't care about me. I'm going. But they didn't. They didn't. Their absorption became deeper and deeper and deeper. In fact, the Acharyas explained when they were going to look for Krishna, the reason that they stopped walking through the forest, is they said, if we keep going, Krishna's going to keep going ahead. because he's running away from us, and if he keeps running ahead in the dark forest, he might hurt his feet on the path. So we'll just stay here so he won't keep running. So that was their mood. And of course, Krishna was also relishing their mood in separation. Just like we do that too. You know, we want to know what people say about us in our absence. Yes? We want to know whether we were missed in our absence. You know, if we're away for a month and we come back, did you miss me? Huh? You were gone? So Krishna also relishes that. Somebody else? Yes.
Yeah, in the slide it was said that Krishna doesn't reciprocate with aspiring devotees so that they would not be proud and, you know, to intensify their love for Krishna. But they still are not pure devotees and have full faith and feel that Krishna is with me, he will protect me. I think only pure devotees can feel the full surrender. But we are aspiring devotees and we don't feel such feelings right now. And sometimes we think that we are in being depressed or how to mitigate this. Like, sometimes we get so depressed, like Krishna is not reciprocating me. It's how to...
What Krishna's indicating here is that he wants to increase the aspiring devotee's humility. What he's trying to do is give us humility. So the reason that we get depressed, you're not going to like this answer, I'm really sorry, but the reason we get depressed is that we're proud. And we think we deserve. I've chanted so many rounds, I've offered so many sticks of incense. You know, I've offered so many obeisances, I've served so many devotees. I gave up my favorite TV show, whatever it was, you know. So just think about a criminal in prison. If the criminal in prison says, I'm ready to be an honest citizen, is that a great thing? It's just ordinary, isn't it? Everybody's supposed to be an honest citizen. Is that like some huge accomplishment? If somebody says, well, I'm not going to steal anymore, I'm going to get a job and I'm going to pay for things, is everyone going to say, wow, you're a great person? That's just expected. You understand? It's just expected. You know, if you're married to a man who never gets off the couch and one day he says, well, I think I'm going to earn a living. Oh, great personality. Of course you're supposed to earn a living. So if we say, okay, Krishna, you know, I'm going to surrender to you, I'm going to serve you, frankly, that's nothing. It's nothing. What is it? It's nothing. We're so proud. Oh, I'm going to serve Krishna. It's nothing. It just means I'm finally going to be an honest, grateful person. And also we get depressed because we think, oh, I'm such a great person. I mean, compared to the demons, we're great people. But we're not really great. You follow? The criminal who's decided to become an honest person, compared to the other criminals, they're a great person. But compared to the honest people, they're not great persons. Especially if they're still struggling with their criminal tendencies. So they get some encouragement. Krishna gives us some encouragement. It's not that Krishna doesn't give us any encouragement ever. Krishna does give us some encouragement. But Krishna's not going to tell us, oh, you great, wonderful person, here I am, now you own me. First of all, it's not real. See, we don't really believe that we're the offenders. You know, we kind of think Krishna's the offender. We don't really believe that we're the offenders. You know, if somebody were to offend any of us without any fault on our part, generally when we have a conflict with someone, there's fault on both parts. But if somebody were to offend us with no fault on our part, you know, you're just walking down the street, minding your own business, and somebody comes and steals your money and steals your passport, all right, takes all of your things, And you have to spend months and months sorting everything out and fixing everything. Maybe then they steal your identity. You know, and you didn't do anything wrong. You did nothing to this person. You did absolutely nothing. They have no reason to hate you and to want to hurt you. So how, what do they have to do in order to have, if they want to be like your best friend? What would they have to do? It's not just a small thing. So if the person comes to you and says, well, I'm really sorry. So you may immediately say, oh, well, that's good. I'm so glad you're sorry. So I see in the beginning, when we first take up Krishna consciousness, Krishna often gives us a lot of reciprocation. He's so excited, you know. Oh! But then he says, okay, now let's get to work. You know, or if you think of somebody with whom you have a loving relationship. So, you know, who here has ever had a good friend or someone you really trusted who then cheated you or disappointed you? Have you ever had anybody you really trusted who cheated you or disappointed you? So suppose that person comes to you. If you think of the person in your life who's really hurt you the most. Really, really hurt you. Someone you really trusted, you really cared about, you really wanted a relationship with them, and they really, really hurt you. So if that person comes to you and just says, I'm sorry, I want the relationship back. So you might be somewhat positive at first. You might say, well, thank you so much for coming. I'm really glad you've come. I'd also like the relationship back. So in the beginning, Krishna does do that. But then what would you say to that person? Prove it, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you say that? Prove it. Show me that you're not going to do that again. You'll test the person. Correct? And especially if the person flip-flops. So if we go to Krishna, Krishna, I surrender to you. And then we go flirt with Maya again. You know, how is he going to believe us? Why should he believe us? Or if this person who you trusted who hurt you, you know, if they say, okay, immediately now that I've said I'm sorry, immediately, fully trust me again. You're not going to do that. I mean, unless you're a fool. You're just not going to do that. Now, what you want that person to do is ask you, what do I have to do so you'll trust me again? Isn't that what you want them to do? And then you want them to do what you say. But you also want them to have a certain attitude. So if you said to that person, well, what, depending on what they did to you, you know, if you said to that person, well, you know, you could start paying me back the money you stole from me. Maybe if you pay me back, you know, 10 rupees a week. So let's say they stole, you know, 10,000 rupees from you. And they're paying you back 10 rupees a week. They say, well, I don't have much money. Okay, I'll take 10 rupees a week. So they're paying, and after they've paid you for 8 weeks, they say, okay, can I have my relationship back? Who's the one who has to say, okay, we can have the relationship back? Who's the person who has to say that? The person who was offended. Now, the person who was offended might say, okay, that's enough. You don't have to pay the full 10,000. You've paid enough. I'm satisfied. They might say that if the person's poor and they're paying 10 rupees a week. But it's that person who has to say, not the person paying. The person paying cannot demand. And if the person is paying demand, if that person comes to you and says, I've been paying you 10 rupees a week for 2 months now, and I'm really depressed that you're not letting me into your house. I mean, I feel really depressed. How am I supposed to have faith in our relationship? How am I supposed to have faith that you've forgiven me? How am I supposed to have faith that you love me? I'm doing what you said. I mean, look, I'm doing what you said. Will that make your process of fixing the relationship longer or slow or faster? Slower, isn't it? As soon as a person comes to you with that kind of demand, You know, well, you have to let me back in. I'm feeling so depressed. Then you're going to say, whoa, I guess I really can't trust you. You don't really understand what you've done. You're not really sorry. Now, if the person says to you, I can understand why you're not letting me in. I can understand why you're not reciprocating with me. I really messed up. I really broke trust. I really broke the relationship. And I can understand that even if I paid back all 10,000 rupees, that you still might not trust me. I can understand that. And I'm willing to go on proving to you that I'm trustworthy as long as necessary until you're ready to have me back. Is that going to make the process longer or shorter? You understand? So Krishna's seeing how we respond. You know, and yeah, he does reciprocate with us sometime. I mean, again, with the person doing that to you, you might occasionally say to them, thank you very much, I really appreciate you making this gesture. You might even spend some time with them sometime, but probably not in your home if they stole the money out of your bedroom. You understand? You follow? If it was someone you let in your house and they stole the money out of your bag in your bedroom, you're probably not going to let them back in your bedroom right away. You might meet them in another location, briefly and formally, and you wouldn't be with them all the time. Because you can't restore the relationship until that person really fully understands how they violated the relationship. Until and unless the person understands how they violated the relationship, you can't restore the relationship. You just can't. So we need to understand how we have violated the relationship. We need to really understand it, not as a theory, not as something that we can write an essay on for a Bhakti Shastri exam. Not as something we can go out and preach to. Well, we all have rebelled against Krishna, and we've envied and hated Krishna, and therefore we are fallen in the material world. I don't mean like that. If someone comes and says, yeah, I understand I did a wrong thing by stealing all that money out of your room when you trusted me and thought that I was your best friend, that doesn't make it, does it? So that's what, and unless we do that, we're not going to restore the relationship and we're not going to have what we're looking for. Does that make sense to everybody? What we're looking for is a restored relationship, but that's what we need to do in order to get what we are looking for. And therefore, Krishna's reciprocation with us tends to be sporadic, and it tends to be somewhat at a distance. It tends to be somewhat formal. But the more we develop this genuine humility, then the more that Krishna's reciprocation with us becomes more intimate and more frequent. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.